It is my pleasure to introduce Susan Y. from San Pedro, California.
Thank you, Susan. Nice to see you.
Hi, I'm Susan Yotis. I'm an alcoholic. And I am so delighted, like Clint, to be here. This is such a thrill. I got up at 5 this morning and ran to work and hustled around trying to get my kids taken care of and different things and thought, I just can't. I can't do this trip. It's too much. But I knew from a little time around this program that this would probably be an excellent adventure, and it is definitely an excellent adventure. And I'm so happy to get to share Bob's birthday and just the ride from the airport with Clint and Bob, and our dinner was so nice. That would have been worth the trip. So thanks for having me so much. It's always a privilege to get to participate in our shared recovery, and especially in a fun, exotic place like Las Vegas, where I've never been. And this is such a nice, enthusiastic group. So the way I got here was I was born to a rabidly alcoholic father and a desperate mother. I was born in Dallas. Shortly after I was born, my parents split up. My mother actually just grabbed my sisters and I and ran away, and assuming that my dad would die. And so I didn't meet him until I was 5. He moved out here, He moved out to California and got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was 5, my parents reconciled. And my first memory of my father was him jumping up on the train we were on and swinging my mother around in a big circle. And I just didn't like that at the gate, I'll tell you. I was the kind of little kid, you know, I have a real dynamic family. They're real outspoken, dynamic, going out in the world and doing stuff. And I was always a lot more shy, sort of more, a voyeur. I like to watch. But there was always something a little, I really like excitement. I really like adventure. I rarely initiate it, but I do like to be in on it. There was always something a little not right about most things in life to me. I was kind of optimistic that something good was going to happen, but everything that happened wasn't quite it, and that trip to California wasn't quite it. But then my life changed dramatically and got pretty interesting because my dad started immediately taking us to AA clubs and AA meetings and getting us involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we constantly had Alcoholics Anonymous members coming to our home at all levels of recovery and all levels of excitement. I compare it to this a lot because it's the best comparison I can think of, but it was kind of like growing up in a mafia family because I had two distinct lifestyles. I had the lifestyle of my home, which you never knew what was going to be going on there. And then I had which was kind of on the down low. I couldn't go around pointing out to my friends. He used to live in a tree and eat raw meat and stuff like that. And then I had my little friends at school who I just wanted to be a regular kid with regular friends doing regular stuff, but I wasn't sure what that was really. So I became a real good chameleon. And some of my best friends growing up were other children of alcoholics who, one fateful day when I was 13, introduced me to beer. And it was great, and a bunch of us went to the beach. We got kind of sick of hanging around our parents. And we went to the beach, and we drank beer, and we talked about our crazy parents. And I can't say that first time I drank beer, you know, suddenly the sky opened, the clouds cleared, but enough so that I really felt a part of for the first time that I can remember. I just felt relaxed, I felt happy, and I felt a part of. And from that time on, whenever I could get it, that's what I would do. And I had to be kind of smart about it. And when I got into high school, you know, I went to a nice Catholic high school, and you had to look and sound a certain way, and I learned to do that. And I got a little group of sophisticated friends that drank in a sophisticated way, and we all looked very cool. And then I had my friends across the street in the park that smoked dope and drop acid and were the bad boys, and I liked them too. And I thought I was very cosmopolitan. I could get along with everyone. They couldn't get along with each other, but I could get along with them because I had some special something. I realized after probably 15 years in recovery, my special something was I just held everybody away. I was loyal to nobody, faithful to nobody, and nothing. And whatever looked good that minute is what I was going to go for. And anyway, and I obviously lived in a dry house, so I had to be real careful about that. And I learned to act. You know, my parents' mantra was act right, act right. And so I found that extremely oppressive. But I did know how to do it. I had to know how to do it. So, you know, I learned to shake hands and be courteous and look people in the eye and ask you how you are and would you like a cup of coffee and, you know. But let me tell you that my sisters and I always referred to you as the crazy AAs, the crazy AAs, and told little stories about you. But I grew up and got older, and when I moved out of the house, you know, I could finally drink the way I wanted, and that was great. I got my own little place. I went to college. I had a lot of high hopes at that time. The first ones I can remember were, one, I was going to be, I don't know where college fit in, I just thought I should go to college, but my first dream was I was going to be a rock star. My second dream was I was going to have one biological baby of every ethnicity on the planet. Those are my two big plans. Now, when you're drinking the way I was then, you're not highly motivated. I didn't actually go after anything, but what I did was I was open to it. I'm open. When it comes, here I am. So I waited. I waited for it, and in the meantime, I went to school, and I was a terrible student and would enroll in five classes, drop three, enroll in five, drop four. But I had a nice party going on at my house most of the time, so that was fun. And, you know, after a while, that got kind of tedious and kind of scary because the people that would show up I wouldn't know, and the next day I wouldn't really know what it was we'd been doing or, you know, ingesting or whatever. And so that got kind of weird, but see, I knew that I didn't have a problem with, put it this way, it never crossed my mind, gee, do you think drinking and these other things you're doing could be a problem for you? Because remember, I grew up in these rooms. I know what alcoholics look like. I could tell you, I could pinpoint, I could sit with somebody, drink with them all night long and tell you if they were an alcoholic. I know what they look like. I know what they act like. This I thought I knew. They all go to prison. They all go to the nut house. They die and get resuscitated. These are the people I knew growing up, the most dramatic, extreme stories ever. So like Clint said, if I got like that, maybe someday I'd think I'd had a problem. That was never my problem. So I just went on, and a big turning point in my life was one night. I'd got this, I only mentioned this guy because he was instrumental in helping me get here, but I decided it was time to start acting right again a little bit because I was kind of losing it. So I started dating this guy at church. I grew up in a church. I had a faith. But like our 12 and 12 says, I had pretty much gotten to the point where I thought I believed in God. I was pretty sure God didn't believe in me. But I would try all kind of spells and incantations and candles and promises and manipulations just in case. And so I thought, well, I'll date this guy from church, and then I'll act right for a while and see how that is. And it was horrible, horrible, the most boring 2 weeks of my life. So this guy called me from my dad's group that my dad sponsored. How kinky is that? And apparently I'd met him, but I didn't remember that I'd met him. And he asked me out on a date, and I just looked at the guy from church and went, absolutely, we're going out on a date. So we went out on a date, and I loved this guy from the gate. He was interesting and exciting, you know. He'd been in Camarillo, in the nut house. He'd been in prison. He had all the low-life stuff that I loved. He had been married several times. He was much older than me. He had all this life experience that I thought was just magical. And he was really, really angry, and he hated most people, but he liked me, so that made me very special. And our first date, we went to the movies, and somebody sat down in front of us with big hair, and he whipped out his lighter and was waving it around. And I thought, this guy will take care of me. I finally found somebody who'll take care of me. So I was all excited about that. And we started dating, and it was interesting and tumultuous. And remember, I know how to act right, and I know how to drink socially, and he didn't care if I had a glass of wine or a bottle of wine, or, you know, he just, I know how to act right, and I did, and I only got really drunk in front of him once and blacked out, and he threw me out of the car, and I want him back. And we just decided that was a fluke. So by this time, I decided that if I just went to school in a different place, I could probably do it. So I was going up in Northern California at UC Davis, and he lived in L.A., and that was beautiful. And I got pregnant, and we got married, and that was dreamy, because that's the way I like to do things then. I like to not ever really make a decision or make a move. I liked it to just come to me, happen to me. Then you can't blame me for it later, right? So I got pregnant. I got married. Don't blame me. And so we got married, and the first 3 months was dreamy because I lived 800 miles away or 400 miles away, whatever it was. But as soon as we got together, it got kind of bad. And I'm going to have to attribute part of that to my daily drinking. I don't think he had an idea. You know, we didn't talk about our hopes or dreams or what we planned. We just got married. We were all excited, and the reality was much different than what we expected. And within 3 months of me moving back, we were in marriage counseling, and I can remember the counselor saying, "Susan, why don't you tell him, what is it you want?" And my answer, which I realize now in retrospect was also a theme of my life, was, "I don't know what I want, but I know it's not this." And that was my whole life. Where is it? Where is it? That looks like it. I'll run there. No, that's not it. Oh, I'll go there. And so our daughter was born, and she didn't fix us. She didn't fix me. So we had 3 kids in 5 years. Each one I thought would fix us, fix me. And none of them did, sad to say. And that felt really oppressive to me. And sadly, it's not something I'm proud of, but it's a true part of my story, that I was a pretty abusive, neglectful mother. I just didn't want to do kids 24/7, and they weren't doing their part, whatever it is they were supposed to do. And I couldn't teach them how to act right, because my little twisted alcoholic mind, right, looked different about every 10 minutes, depending on what I wanted that minute. You know, so how's a 2-year-old supposed to keep up with that? And my marriage got violent. It just got violent. And our house was ugly. Our house was ugly and violent and a place I dreaded going home to. And so I tried to keep a series of little jobs, and I tried to do things until pretty soon my drinking took that from me. And I started to black out a little bit. And I got more and more and more. I think Clint mentioned it. There's a time when the drinking enables you to get out there and live in the world. And then there's a time when the drinking takes that away. It did for me. And this shyness, this natural shyness, turned into fear, real, real primitive fear. And I couldn't really be around people anymore. And I couldn't, slowly, slowly, I just backed away, backed away, backed away. And my husband just stayed away from me. He just worked 7 days a week. He liked to work, and the less time we spent together, the better, and that's the way we liked it. And those kids, God only knows what was going on with those kids. I don't know. I was there. But, you know, I was blessed. My parents really loved my kids. They took care of them a lot for me, a lot. And that was a big blessing. But where I ended up was laying on my kitchen floor all alone. And mostly, I'm horrified to tell you, but it's true, singing Starry, Starry Night, knowing the world was never meant for one as beautiful as me. Because I really felt like all these years I had tried so hard, because I had these dreams and I had these ideals, I felt like I had given my all. You people, you don't realize what you've destroyed, what you've taken away. I was the victim of the universe by that time. I was just a drunk. I was just a drunk who was destined to be found someday on my kitchen floor, half eaten by my dogs, basically. And the miracle was, I think God can use any character defect. I know God can, put it that way. It's happened in my life. But one character defect I didn't even know I had was this huge ego. I didn't realize my feeling like a victim of the universe was actually this false pride. And that I was the saddest, poorest person in the world, and everybody hurt me worse than anybody for no reason. So one day, my older sister, I had 2 older sisters that lived in New Mexico, that they were the last 2 people on earth I would talk to, and she called me, and she said, You know, I've been going to meetings for 30 days, and I felt gutted. I thought, what? I really thought she'd lost her mind. I thought, you're crazy, AA now? She was gone. She was gone from me. I'd lost her. Oh, I was sick to my stomach. I got off the phone. But, of course, then my head kicked in. I thought about it for a couple days, and I thought, I bet she only called me because she thinks I have a drinking problem. And how rude is that? It made me mad. So this is how God picked me up and carried me without my knowledge or permission, because my head said, go to a meeting, show her and them, because everyone's watching me, right? Because it's all about me. Show her and them that this is not your problem, and then God will take you. That was my new deal with God. Then God would take me, because every night I'd pray to die. Just take me. I wanted to die so bad, but I was too afraid to have any pain, so that took out a few options. I didn't want barf to death, and I wanted to look pretty, so I couldn't shoot myself, because I wanted everybody to see how sad I was. So I just laid there and prayed for it. So I thought, well, I'll go to this meeting, God will take me. And I called central office, and I found a meeting, and I went in, and I stood in the lobby, because I was terrified. And by that time, acting right was never an option, because I didn't know what right was anymore. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. I couldn't even pick my head up, and I certainly wasn't going to speak to you. But I stood in the lobby terrified. And then my old training kicked in, and I thought, well, you can go sit in that meeting. I drank wine coolers all day so I'd be sober. And I went in, and I sat in the back row, and I sat next to this old man who was weeping. So guess what I did? I wept. So we wept. And that was my experience. And the only thing I heard in that whole meeting was, they go insane or they die, from that portion of chapter 3. And I felt like, I'm already insane, and I really feel like I'm dead. I'm just walking around dead. I heard it. I didn't go, oh, I'm home. Now I know what my solution is. I already knew this. This isn't my solution. But boy, that was sad to me that I was already dead. So I don't know if I really learned this, but at the time, one more time, a moment of grace, I thought the rule here in AA was that you don't just run out of the meeting afterward. You kind of stand there and look cool, about 2 minutes, and then you walk out. So I went over by the coffee maker after the meeting, and I stood there trying to look cool, all dressed in black and reeking. And this huge Amazon with bright red hair ran up on me. Hi, honey, visiting? Stiletto heels. Okay, I hated everyone, but I really hated her. I was like... But you know what? I had nothing. I had nothing. Our book talks about you can't drink and you can't not drink. I was at that place. I couldn't drink, and I couldn't not drink, and the drinking didn't fix it anymore. I think Clint mentioned that. It was just, my head never stopped. I could drink until I passed out. I could go to oblivion, but it was just the most horrible place I could imagine to be, with no escape. And I think that was the only thing that I didn't even know I let go absolutely, but I can tell you now, remembering that I was empty. I was empty. I had no plan. I had no nothing. I had nothing. And I certainly didn't think I was an alcoholic. So she's got nothing to, you know. So she took me outside. She talked to me, this other lady. She was happy. She was funny. She said, oh, your kids are that little? You sure you want to get sober, honey? I just sort of stood there being non-confrontational, like I was occasionally bursting into meaningful tears, but that's about it. So, because, you know, I could barely stand there around somebody. I was not going to say anything. So she gave me your number. She gave me the other lady's numbers. She said, go home, get rid of the alcohol in your house, and call me in the morning. And I went home, and I drank up all what I could find in my house. Because I'd been doing that occasionally, but every night I would swear I was never going to drink like that again, and tomorrow I'm going to not hurt my kids and not hurt my husband, and I might walk out the door tomorrow. I might do that. So this night, I go home drinking everything up. That was okay. And I got up the next morning, and instead of going to look for something to drink, see, here's grace. This is more than God carrying me. I think this is God drop-kicking me, because I can't tell you why I did it. I called her, and she started to talk to me, and immediately gave me some stuff to read in the big book in the 12 and 12. And then she wanted me to call her back and tell her what I thought of it. I think it was Bill's story. Tell me what you relate to in Bill's story. I looked at Bill's story. I relate to nothing in Bill's story. But remember my ego. Now, I know I'm not an alcoholic, and I'm waiting for God to kill me. But in the meantime, This woman only has 3 years sober. I could tell her about the big book and blow her mind. So I started looking for stuff I could tell her about. I neglected to mention I'd been in Al-Anon for 3 years to fix my husband. I thought that's what Al-Anon was for. That would fix my husband. And it didn't fix my husband, but I did get to work all the steps drunk. So I can tell you that doesn't work well. Didn't fix me. I didn't feel better. And burning that four-step on the beach was beautiful. But other than that, didn't do much for me. So if you're here and you're feeling like I don't really relate to this, or if you're here again and you're thinking I already did this, if it worked, it'd probably still be working. Let me tell you, miracles happen every day. Like Clint said, it just continues to happen if you just stay. I just stayed. I continued to go to meetings with this woman. I went to meetings with this woman, 5 meetings a week, and kept my head down. But when she said, raise your hand, Sam, Sue's an alcoholic, I did. I didn't believe it. And then one day I did. I can't tell you what day that was, but one day I knew it. And it was because we were working in the book. We were working the steps. She asked me to get those steps done in a year. She said, stay in that marriage for a year unless your life is threatened. I stayed in the marriage for a year. I got my steps done in a year. When I was about 10 months sober, I looked up and there was a woman from work at the meeting. And I went, spy from work. And like, you never mind them watching you barfing in the driveway, but they better never see you at a meeting. So she, we started to talk. It turned out she had 2 days. That's another blessing. I am a spoiled brat. If I even glance towards God, I just get... I mean, I just happened to sit in that meeting. This woman showed up. We worked at the same place. We lived on the same street. I didn't know that. We drove the same little beat-up car that was spewing carbon monoxide in our faces. We, you know, we just had everything in common. And so we started taking walks every morning. I lived by the ocean, and we'd walk about 3 miles every morning before work and pray and talk about our sponsors, and, you know. And that kept me sober. And after a couple months of that, when I was done with my steps, she said, would you be my sponsor? And I'm like, isn't a sponsor supposed to be some magic shaman? That's what I thought. So I asked my sponsor, and my sponsor said, you give her what you got, honey. So I did. So I got to go through the book again, twice in 2 years, go through those steps. And what a blessing that was. And how, you know, how much better my life got. It was a struggle, but I managed to get a little job. I managed to finally graduate from college 20 years later. Yay. I did several of my little dreams came true, and then I decided I'll move to New Mexico and I'll live by my sisters, and that'll be my hugest dream come true. And because by this time, both my older sisters were sober. How lucky is that? You can't BS people that you grew up with. You can't go, now my case is different. I go, no, it isn't. I know exactly where you're coming from. That has been such a blessing in my life. So I moved to New Mexico, and I thought, well, now I'm just rocketing into the fourth dimension. I was 6 years sober. I had accomplished a few little things. I was stopping the violence in my home. Everything was new. And then got there, and guess what? None of my dreams came true, my dreams. But God sure worked in my life. That sure was an amazing 2 years of my life. I didn't get my dream job. My oldest child, my daughter, if you're a parent in here, I'll just tell you my experience was, because I got sober and said, we're not violent anymore, we're happy, joyous, and free, my kids didn't buy that. My kids were furious. As they got older, they got furious. And when I was 6 years sober, my daughter would say, I hate you, I hate you. She was goth. She had pierced her entire body. And I hate you. First, I would make the mistake of saying, why? You know what? I didn't have enough of the promise yet about no remorse, not regretting the past. She'd tell me I'd burst into tears, I'd be despondent. So I quit asking. But then she started saying, I'd like to kill you. And she would tell me she was going to kill me. And I would say, we're not going to fight. This is a whole new life. And then enough stuff would fly by and we'd fight. And I just thought, geez, we're never... I'd wake up a couple nights, her and her weird little friends would be gathered around me like the Manson family. I didn't know what was going to happen. Well, what eventually happened was she made a couple attempts on my life. And she ended up getting arrested. And She was in the psych ward briefly, and then she had to go to juvenile detention, and then we had to go, she became a ward of the state, basically, but she lived with me, and we had to go to counseling, and we had to go to classes. I had to have a social worker come to my house twice a month to make sure my other children were safe. Now, how humiliating is that at 6 years sober? I was like, where were you people 6 years ago when they could have used this? I know this now. Don't tell me that. But see, I kept coming to these rooms. And I had a good sponsor who kept telling me, it doesn't matter what you think. It matters how you act. I learned what acting right was here. It's not faking it. It's faking it, but it's, well, okay, I'll get to it. I learned to act right. She said, show up. It doesn't matter if you feel contempt, you feel fear, you feel fury. It doesn't matter. You just show up, do what they ask you to do as best you can. I just continued to do that. And I had these rooms to come to, and these women to come to, and these other mothers to come to panic. And nobody ever said, oh, get out of here with that. We're sick of hearing about it. Because, boy, I had a lot of panic. And it was the closest I'd been in sobriety to wanting to die again. It was the closest I'd been, and I felt so devastated. And, like, what was the point of all that then? What's the point of the last 6 years? They might have been something had I just stayed drunk. They could have gotten up and out. My struggling ruined them. Ugh. My sick predator mind went on and on with that. But I just kept showing up, and you know what? I learned a lot. I learned a lot, and I can tell you now, this woman is 25 years old. She is my heart. She is one of my very best friends. And a therapist told us back then, you know what? You two never bonded. You never will. Let go. That little shred of ego jumped up. Now, I know we bonded those 2 days in the hospital. After she was born. Might have been the pain medication, but I'm pretty sure we bonded. But you know what? I came to these rooms, and that's not what you people said. You people never said give up, and so I didn't. And so today she is my heart, and today she's given me two beautiful little grandchildren that she actually leaves with me. She leaves them with me. I mean, the first one she would kind of watch. But after that, you know, and spontaneously 6 months ago, she started going to Al-Anon. Which is so, I'm so grateful for. And it's so hard for me to stand back and shut up and not go, what step are you on? What are you doing? But just for herself, you know. And I'm so proud of her. And my third child while I was in Santa Fe was diagnosed with a little fetal alcohol effect. Luckily not permanently damaged, but a little developmental stuff. And the perfect school arrived. And they said, we want to put him in this school. And I said, absolutely not. He'd already been shuffled around four other schools, but he's not special. Don't you call him special. But, you know, I finally put him in the school, and he walked in third grade, and he couldn't write his name, and he walked out in fifth grade at grade level. Do you know what made me put him in that school? You. Just openness, willingness. Do what you can do. So I did it. So what a blessing that was. So that was a very eventful 2 years. I came back here. I married a nice guy who I met because he saw Bob and Bill. I had a picture of Bob and Bill on my wall that I'd gotten at an international convention, and he was interested in that because he and his ex-wife had gone through a hospital program, and that was a nicer beginning than setting someone on fire for me. And he was such a nice guy and such a good friend, and we ended up getting married, and I had three kids, and he had two, and then we had two more together, so now we have the happy Brady Bunch. And it's not the Brady Bunch. I've tried to force it to be the Brady Bunch a few times, but, you know, it's really, really good. And when I got back to California, that second child of those first three, he came up on his anger, and he was the kind of kid that would stand on the roof and swing a shovel as you went by. He didn't even threaten. He just did it. He was an action guy. And he had a mohawk and a leather jacket and SS boots and a dog collar, spiky dog collar. And people would say, you know, he looks scary. And I'd say, he's very sweet. And one day, a guy at a meeting came in, and he was so upset, and he was sharing about how he was so terrified because he'd seen his daughter standing on the corner talking to this scary kid. So I was able to say, that's not a scary kid, that's my kid, after he described him. Anyway, he ended up getting arrested for violent crime, not related to me, thank God. And he was taken out of my home and put in placement for 3 years. And another kick in the butt. I mean, just another humiliation, I thought. I sit in meetings and listen to women say, I came here and got my kids back. And I said, I came here and they were all jettisoned to the state. Why is that? But you know what? They had to get where they had to get. It had to work itself out. My amends were not, sorry, darling, we're starting over tomorrow. These were my amends. When I hear people say living amends, I go, yeah, living amends are pretty huge, or they turned out to be for me. And this was another one. And I thought, well, I've been through this before. It won't be that big of a deal. It was a huge deal. And boy, did I learn a lot. And boy, did I come to meetings and go, and boy, did I get a lot of help here from the women and just from you and just from being able to show up. And what was the message I got over and over? The same one I got the first time. Stand up and be sober. That's the best thing you have. I felt so impotent. I would sit in court and I felt impotent, and I would go visit him in jail, and I would go visit him in his little weird house with those boys, and it just seemed so sad to me. But then I realized, look, I get to be here. I tell my sponsor, I have to do that. She goes, you get to do that. You get to do that. And I got to do that. And, you know, I got to be the only mother there many times just because I was sober. I mean, for me. I wouldn't have been there either, but I got to be the only mommy for all these boys many times on holidays and various times, and what a blessing that was, and what a lot of love I learned there. I mean, it was just amazing, and now this boy is 21 and healthy and has all his parts and working and living a life, and oh, thank God. I am so blessed. I am so blessed here, and you know, I just keep doing the same thing I started doing with that wacky redhead in 1989. I just keep coming to meetings. I keep listening to what you have to say. I keep trying to take direction. I keep trying to act like I have an open mind if I don't have an open mind. And it's still working for me, and it works better and better. And as Clint said, the sky gets bigger and bigger and bluer and bluer. And, you know, I walked in here at 31 years old, wanting to be dead so bad, I felt like I already was. And here I am 17 years later, and I love life. I'm excited about life. I love to get up in the morning and see what's going to happen. You know, I love this adventure. This is such a thrill. People say, oh, I came to the program and I got my life back. I came to the program and I got my life. I had no idea what a life could be or look like. You know, I was so busy changing colors that I finally exploded. And I'm just so blessed. And now I have two little children who are 12 and 8 and who have never seen me drunk, who I've never brutalized, who I've never left, locked the door and said, see you soon, I hope, you know, who've never seen me beat up their dad or vice versa. I mean, what a miracle that is. What a miracle that is. And something that I never take for granted. I mean, some days it seems regular, but it always occurs to me again, how did I get this life? How do I get this life? It's just amazing to me, and it's such a blessing. And my little girl, the 8-year-old, will often say to me, now they've been to, I don't know, a couple meetings. She'll say, now why do you go to, I'll say, I've got to go to these meetings to save my life, honey. Well, what do you do there? We talk. So you talk, and that saves your life? I say, uh-huh. And she just wanders off in a confused way. You can't explain this to somebody. And let me tell you, I grew up in these rooms. If you could explain it to somebody, if being able to read and understand the words here is going to save you, I wouldn't have had to be coming to these rooms for the last 17 years. I wouldn't probably have picked up a drink. Knowing this and doing this are two such different things, such different things. Like our book says, this is an experience that should not be missed. If you're new and you're thinking, this is like the worst possible thing that could have ever happened to me, hey, I feel your pain. I dig it. I hope you're desperate enough that you just keep coming back. Just stay. And I guarantee you it will be the adventure magnificent. And that's what this coming here has been for me. So thanks for having me.